Good morning. We would like to welcome you out to this study session of the Mesa City Council. We'd like to excuse Mayor Smith, who is out of town, and Councilmember Richens will be joining us shortly. The first item on the agenda is to review the agenda for the regular council meeting on April 1st. And as soon as the council members have their computers up and running, first page would be items 2 through 4A. Items 4B through 4D. Sorry. Oh, yes. Well, questions. Maybe we'll have a little bit presentation here on this.
I think they're ready.
Yes.
Whether you like it or not. Yeah.
I think they're because of the significant activity as far as vehicle purchases. I think they would like to make a brief the council if that
wonderful.
Would be okay.
Thank you.
You
would
you know it's on consent?
Right. Let's keep it that way.
All of it. You can go off at your risk.
Yes. Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you. Maybe that's what we should say. Vice Mayor and Council. Fleet and Purchasing have done a tremendous amount of work over the last few months and bidding out all the vehicle purchases that are on this agenda. And if you remember your last agenda, there was a few vehicle purchases also. Those were also bid out. And there'll be a few more on your April 15th agenda. And all these purchases have been bid out. In the past, these vehicle purchases may have been purchased off a cooperative contract, but Fleet and Purchasing worked together to create this opportunity for local vendors. And as you can see on the agenda, some of the purchases are being made by the local vendors. And if you remember last week, the awards went to local vendors. I just want to thank Pete and Fleet for all the work that they've done, and Alice for all the work in bidding all this out. And as you can see from the agenda and the number of items that are also on the agenda today, they did this while they were maintaining a tremendous workload other than vehicle purchases. And with that, we're ready to answer any questions that you have on the first 9 items, which are the vehicle purchases.
Sure. Jim, can you give us a quick summary of how many units that is, vehicles, and do you have that available in front of you?
I have 115. And that's from last week, this week, and other vehicles that may be coming to you on the 15th.
Right. That's for the viewing public's benefit to understand the scope and the magnitude of this tremendous amount of work, as you say.
It was 17 separate bid packages that went out.
Right. And Vice Mayor, Council, I think it's important to note, to know that the staff, and I think some of the council has received this briefing, that the staff went out and met with all of the local vendors.
That's correct.
In Mesa to make them aware of this bid before it went out. We also made them aware of what the state contract, I'm losing the word, that was out there already, so that they would know kind of where the pricing was. We also reminded them that the council has also approved the ability for us to discount or give them credit, I guess is the right word, for the sales tax, the local sales tax portion of the bid. So all of those were discussed and presented to each of the Mesa dealerships before the bids went out, and then they were able to bid on the projects. And then you can see that did result in some local vendors being successful. Well, we wish there were more, but others, the large ones, the biggest numbers are still the Tahoes that are going out for the police department. So we're still working very hard with our local dealerships, making them aware when we're going out for these purchases so they can have the opportunity to have all the information for them so they can compete aggressively.
Yes, Mr. Richens.
I am very pleased with the efforts that have been made. I mean, we really just have to give people an opportunity, and I think we've done that. We've reached out. We've told people what's coming up, And it's up to our local vendors to then win bids. And it's still a competitive marketplace. It's still important for us to take the lowest bidder and save our taxpayers as much money on these purchases as we can. It's great. I'm thrilled when we have local participation. But so thank you for the efforts that you guys have made in reaching out to local vendors. And we need to continue that. But I think we've done a great job in involving them in that process. So thank you.
Thanks. Councilmember Summers.
Curiosity. I agree with what Dave Richin said. I think it's about opportunity and giving your local business that opportunity. But on the bounce of that too, do we know that the amount of money we're spending on these vehicles is about what we would have spent if we had gone with a state contract as we have done in the past, or how much above or below?
Matter of fact, all of these prices were compared against.
Against that.
So and they there are some that are still coming from a state contract, because the state contract was still the lowest. Is that right?
That's correct. What took place was that the folks that do have the state contracts have actually bid these bids also. So I think your question is the delta between the state contract and the actual winning bid number. In the case where our local folks, it's about $1,000 difference is what we're seeing.
Per vehicle?
Per vehicle. Yeah, it depends upon the type of vehicle that it is. The state contract pricing is very, very low, and our folks are getting in the range of about $1,000 difference. In the case of, we've got a bid that's coming up to you next, I guess it's the 16th, and in that particular case, Brown & Brown actually did beat the state contract bid by using the 1.75 preference.
Okay, which is our
sales tax.
So we're skewing the local sales tax to encourage
that,
the local
that
business.
Is correct.
Do we have for these, however, I forgot how many there were, purchases, do we know how much the difference is between the two total?
In the case with Burge Ford getting two different contracts here, one for 12 vehicles, one for one, in those two cases, they were made the award based upon technical difficulties with the lowest competitor. So they were lower than Burge Ford. The delta there was about $700 per vehicle.
Pete, on the Tahoes, though, was just the opposite. The local bidders, even with the discount, were still about $1,300?
Yeah, they were
$1,300
still about $1,300 difference there.
What the best we could get from a local contractor and what the state contract was. So it's kind of gone, it goes back and forth on sometimes the local guys are able to beat the state contract and sometimes, but it's the margin's getting much more narrow than it's been.
There are some
past
things that we're seeing. When we first started this process, and you know, as Jim said, you know, there were 17 total contracts that went through, and that took some time to get those through. But there are some things that we did see. With the local bidders at the beginning and the early contracts that, results that we were getting back, bid results, a lot of those were not filled out very well. There were mistakes. There were some errors. There were corrections that needed to be made. And as this has gone on in several different iterations, they are better and better at doing this. And actually, the contracts that ended up going to Burge actually were in the later group. So they're getting more astute, and they seem to be spending some more time on it also. To give you a little bit of background on the state contract, you know, the obvious question is, how come these our local bidders can't hit the state contract price? The state contract price itself, they're really not making any money on the state contract price. What they're doing is that it's volume through the dealership. So, for instance, if you're going to sell 600 vehicles through the state contract, the dealership is going to get that discounting from General Motors for that additional throughput. And you're making your profit then based upon the delta that you have in your retail side. There's where you're actually making profit. So you're making more profit on the retail side. You're not really making any profit at all on the sales to governmental agencies. So some of these businesses are set up to do that, and some don't have a lot of experience doing that. Here in Mesa, we only have two vendors that have fleet departments. The balance of the dealerships do not. And when we found that out, when we went out and did the outreach and started talking to the local dealerships, some of them said, you know, this is really not what we do. And it just really boiled down to where we had two dealers who were, you know, aggressive enough and wanted to be in the fleet business that you're seeing the results here.
And for just as a simple number, for all the vehicles we're purchasing, how much above the state contract do we expect that we're paying for these total? All vehicles, or is it even?
No, there's not any vehicle we're paying above the state contract.
So we're all
they're either at or below. Is that
at or below? For and going out, that's incredible.
No, that's not necessarily correct. There are some in the case of Verge, you do have some, those vehicles are higher than the state contract price.
But what was the difference in the life cycle part of that, or what was the reason?
No, it's just simply that's their declared profit margin. Once again, remember there is no profit margin for these dealers at the state contract price.
Okay.
Now, and to kind of take that a little further. If you do not have the state contract and you're pushing these vehicles through, well, you're not going to be selling enough vehicles to get that discounting from General Motors or Ford to make it worth your while.
Okay. Any other questions? My takeaway was fair and open process, great outreach by staff to educate, help people, you know, look at the process. So I think the citizens win in the end, and I appreciate all the efforts that you do.
One thing I would like to leave the council with is something that is, I think, is important. We're talking about capital purchases, but I'd ask you to remember this, too. Annually, fleet spends a tremendous amount of money with these dealerships locally.
Right.
We do that in parts and service. If you look at Burge Ford last year, we spent $97,000 with Burge in parts and service, and with Brown & Brown, about $64,000. So that's a reoccurring profit for them every year. Where this is one sale only, they may or may not get it. So they're making money now on both sides of the house, which is really great.
Great. Well, thank you. I appreciate the time.
And you're welcome.
I believe that takes us up through 4I, unless I've missed something. So the next item would be 4J.
Hold on, my computer fell asleep.
Sorry. And if everybody's caught up there. And then, so going to the next page on the hard copy, looking at items 4K through 4M.
Alex?
Yes, Mr. Summers.
4M looks like it's an important program. Can we have like a
two-minute briefing on that?
Please. Looks like through the fire department, fire and medical services group. Is there anybody here that could speak to that? Great.
Or even 60 seconds. I think it's what I said, I hope, the first time.
Less than 60 seconds.
Please feel free to introduce yourselves.
Less than 60 seconds. It's a good program. I thought we'd get it on tape for people who might be watching.
Certainly.
They may have a need for this program.
Councilmember Summers, Vice Mayor Fenter, we've got Warren here from our Fire and Life Safety Education Division. He's in charge of this program. He's been working through purchasing to get those, but I think Councilmember Summers would just like an overview of what this program does and how we're interacting with the community. So I'll turn it over to Warren to answer that.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. The Home Safety Inspection Program actually provides a service to members of our community where we have volunteers that go in. Basically, they do an analysis of a customer's home. We'll look at their existing smoke alarms, see whether or not they're outdated, whether or not they're functioning. If they're outdated, we will replace up to two of them. We will replace the batteries. We actually go through the home, look through any potential hazards, trip hazards, any overloaded electrical outlets. Again, we're trying to make the environment that they live in safe, not only for the occupant, but if fire and medical needs to go in and either do a rescue or provide medical services, it's safe for all involved. This particular item that we're talking about here is hearing impaired smoke alarms, and we're working with the Sequoia School, which is a charter school, as well as partnering with Mesa Public Schools, as well as looking for opportunities in the community to provide this to seniors that might also be hearing impaired.
Yes, Councilwoman Higgins.
Thank you. I just have a basic smoke alarm question since you're here, and I'm sure, I'm not the only one. But you said check to see if it needs to be replaced. Even though you test your alarm and it's working, Is there like a life cycle of a
smoke? Yes, there is. Smoke alarms actually do have a 10-year life cycle because of there is a radioactive isotope that's in them.
Really?
So
even though you test them and they all turn on, you should still replace them.
That's correct.
So that's not just manufacturing, let's make some money. You really need to replace them.
No, there's an efficiency that drops off after 10 years. So it will still function, but not as well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. Any other questions? It looks like this is a FEMA grant with a 20% match from the City of Mesa. So
yes.
We appreciate all those grants and getting those federal dollars back here and helping. Well, thank you very much.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks. Sure. Thank you, Vic.
Thank you. So that was 4M. Moving on to 4N through 4P. And nothing there. 4Q through 4S. Yes, Councilmember Richens.
On 4S, it's quite an increase in the contract amount, so maybe let us know what's going on. Got some emergencies, well repairs, if you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Good morning, Vice Mayor, Council, Councilmember Richens. Yeah, unfortunately, it's been a bit of a tough year for us for our wells. As you know, we do try to keep our wells up so that we have redundancy during drought and during canal outages. So well maintenance and repair and rehabilitation is pretty much always ongoing. Unfortunately, we just hit some snags this year. We did have a problem in, the Desert Sage Zone's well number 9. We had some problems with arsenic. So we tested that. We pulled the casing to see if we could seal part of the well and remediate for arsenic in that way, and that was pretty expensive. Unfortunately, it turned out that that was not successful, and we'll probably have to abandon that well or do arsenic treatment. Let's see.
And on that well, arsenic, just a little, that's a naturally occurring process.
Let me elaborate on that. Arsenic is naturally occurring, unfortunately, in the aquifer throughout the Valley of the Sun. There are a couple of different ways that we can kind of treat for it. The way that the aquifer is layered, the arsenic tends to occur in certain areas and not in others. So if you're lucky, you can go in and kind of cement certain areas of the well so that the well is no longer pulling from those portions of the aquifer. And oftentimes that will actually work, and then the water that you're pulling is out of the aquifer that doesn't have arsenic. Sometimes that doesn't work, and unfortunately in this case it did not work. So we're just not going to use the well. If we decide that we need to use the well in the future, we'll actually have to bring in some media and treat for it at the well site. But that was a pretty major expense. I think that was about $70,000. And then... But we also, on arsenic, found arsenic in City Well 26, and so and we were not able to case, put cement in the well and case it so that we could pull cleaner water from other parts of the aquifer. And City Well 26 is a really important well for us. It's one of our highest producing wells, so we're actually going to move arsenic remediation equipment from one of our wells that had the equipment and is no longer being used, and we're going to load it on a truck, the whole device, we're going to load it on a truck and move it over to City Well 26 and use the media to remediate for arsenic there before it goes into our system. And that was, that's going to cost us, I think, another close to $100,000 to move all of that equipment.
Is that part of this?
Actually, you'll be seeing. You'll be seeing that one later. That we're going to have to increase the well maintenance contract to do that. And then let me see what else we have on here.
Question on that. And those wells are just used for your backup, right? 80% or 90% is
well, water? A little of both. I would say that's true. Mainly backup, Councilwoman Higgins. We use them mainly as backup in the western zone, which is West Mesa, when the SRP canal outage occurs every year. But in East Mesa in particular, there is a fair amount of constant groundwater pumping. Not that much. I would say maybe 10% of the demands in East Mesa, because we don't quite have the capacity available in Southeast Mesa in particular. That's why we've come to you repeatedly and talked about building the third mm-hmm. surface water treatment plant in Southeast Mesa. So, but yeah, mainly in West Mesa, it's mainly drought and backup pumping. So let me look at my list and see if, City Well 8, the screens in the well were really clogged, and so we had to pull the casing and scrub it and see if we could clean that off, and that's been successful, so that's good. But that was another $45,000. Let me see. Oh, yeah, and then in Desert, New Well, Desert Well 18 down in Southeast Mesa, that one we were doing the testing for it, the water quality testing for it, and unfortunately we couldn't discharge in the area where that was, we couldn't discharge the waste from the well nearby. There was some construction in the storm drains going on, so we had to install some additional piping like 3/4 of a mile to be able to test the well, and that turned out to be very expensive as well. So unfortunately, it's been a rough year for our wells. I'm hoping next year will be better for us.
Question, yes, please. Do we, I know that arsenic treatment stuff was at the well at Greenfield and Main Street, the one you were using and hadn't used for years? Because
right, it was Falcon Well 4.
Mm-hmm. So how many wells do we have in the city that we need to have that arsenic? Because I know you explained how that whole system works and how expensive it is just for me.
Right. I would have to go back and double-ish. Not that many. I mean, Mesa's been relatively fortunate compared to some of the other cities. Mm-hmm. I know 4. I think it was Desert Well 10. Offhand, I want to say we are no longer using about 3 or 4 wells because of arsenic. But to compared to some of the other cities in the valley, that's actually not that bad.
So then we only have that treatment on that one well that you're moving it to?
Correct. Okay. The others, for now, we've just decided we'll no longer use. And then if we need them in the future, we'll go ahead and invest in the remediation. It's relatively expensive. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to do it unless we really have to.
Right. Thank you.
Any follow-up, sir?
Yeah, it's important for the public to realize that sometimes we take for granted, we turn on the tap, water comes out, and there's a lot that goes into the providing safe, clean drinking water to our public. And so I just thank you for the explanation to help us understand what's going on in our system. So.
Thank you very much, Councilmember Richards. That is true. But your original suspicion was correct. It's been a bad year. So hopefully next year we'll get lucky.
And Councilmember Richens serves on AMWA. What's that acronym?
The Arizona Municipal Water Users Association. So it's all the SRP cities get together and share ideas and best practices and keep an eye on what each other are doing.
Excellent. I appreciate you doing that. That's wonderful. Well, thank you, Ms. Hortson. Appreciate that. Okay, so that was 4S. We are now at 4T through... looks like 5B, and if there's nothing there, item 6 is take action on the following MOU, and I believe we're going to have a presentation just following this, so if the council is okay with that, it should be pretty good. Exciting stuff. And then item 7A would be introduction of the following ordinance with regard to health, sanitation, and environment, stormwater. So if there's no information there, let me go on. Item looks like 8A, and then we have items 9A and 9B.
I just want to make a comment.
Yes, please, Councilman.
I just want to comment on that series. It's, we're annexing property. And how well that the developer and the attorneys worked with the neighborhood and the city to make a really a walkable community and accessible to things next door, rather than, they have walkways from the neighborhood to the actual church on the corner so that people can get out of the subdivision without actually getting in their car and driving a mile to get someplace that's like 100 yards away. So it was a really good working relationship, and I think they're going to build a great neighborhood out there. So thank you.
Wonderful. And that is the 1200 block through the 1300 block of North Crisman Road out in that area.
98 through 90.
90. Okay. Great. Looks like it. Okay. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is hear a presentation and discuss and provide direction regarding hotel development at Riverview. Feel free to introduce yourselves. And
good morning, Vice Mayor. I'm Scott Rigg with the Economic Development Office.
Good morning, Vice Mayor and Council. I'm Paul Welker with Sunridge Hotel Group. We're located in Mesa, Arizona.
I'm Brian Welker with Sunridge Hotel Group.
Thank you, Vice Mayor, Members of Council. We're here to discuss Riverview, which is used to be the golf course down there, but now is the home of the upcoming Chicago Cubs spring training facility. We want to take a couple of minutes and talk about some, as Vice Mayor mentioned, some exciting developments. Wanted to take a minute at the very beginning to talk about the entire site and walk back probably a year and a half, 2 years ago as we started to lay this out. As you go from west to east, we have what we call City Field, just the fourplex of baseball fields that are used by the Cubs during spring training, but outside of spring training can be used for city events, for city leasing, to fantasy camps, or other activities. We have in the middle there the team facilities, which is the actual team clubhouse and their fields of practice. And then you have the stadium moving right in the center of that. Then we have just east of that is what we'll call the commercial development area, sometimes affectionately known as the Wrigleyville West concept. And then bringing it home on the east is the revitalized and redeveloped Riverview Park. And so really what we designed in this project is a three key portions, which is the spring training facility on one end, on the other end is the fantastic new Riverview Park, and in the middle is this concept we talked about way back when. It was about bringing commercial development outside the front door of the stadium and taking advantage of that opportunity. Again, this is the area we're talking about. It's commonly known as the Paseo. It's that connection between the front door to the stadium and the lake. If you were to go out there today, you could literally stand on the edge of the lake on that platform and look directly west down the Paseo into that right field main entry into the stadium. And this Paseo is envisioned to be, it's a wide kind of a boulevard with some lush landscaping that that people can use before and after the game for tailgating, for meandering back and forth. The goal is we want to pull those people before and after the game out of the stadium to utilize this area. As you'll also see the green, and you kind of see overlaid as soccer fields, this is game day parking, but when it's non-game day parking, it is be used for other sports activities such as soccer. The area that's considered from the Wrigleyville development, as we've kind of outlined here, is about 15 acres, about 9.5 on the north Paseo and about 6.5 on the south Paseo. As we started to get into the project and look at how would commercial development potentially be laid out, we'd worked with some designers on out in the community to figure out what would be the best way to potentially lay out. This is not the final design. This is an opportunity that we have a document that we can share with potential developers, whether it be hospitality or retail or eateries, potentially how that Paseo area could be laid out. And one of the key components are the hospitality industry, the hotels. This one shows two in the middle. We'll talk about a little bit as a slightly different alignment because of some recent discussions. But I wanted to give you the idea about what we're envisioning here. Back in our early discussions with the Cubs really wanted to take the lead in that Wrigleyville discussion, and right now in the agreement they have technically the lead on leading all activities with Wrigleyville development. In the past few months, probably the last 6-8 months with the city manager's leadership, we've worked with the Cubs to figure out how can we both jointly work on moving this forward, and what we've kind of come to an informal agreement that we hope to come back in the next 30, 45 days, which is formal agreement with the Cubs, is that the city will focus on the hospitality aspect with the hotels on the north Paseo, and then the Cubs will be allowed to focus their efforts on that south side of Paseo, really focusing on how can they be successful in pulling some of those Chicago type of eateries and unique aspects out of Chicago area into this project. The goal is to create just not another power center that you see either at Tempe Marketplace to the west or Riverview to the east. The goal is between the stadium activity and the park and some of these hotels and other activities that this becomes a destination year-round, whether it be for spring training or for other baseball or soccer leagues or tournaments or taking the opportunity to be there at the park. We think we're excited about this. The Cubs are excited about this, especially with some of the things we're going to talk about here in just a minute. So we've had an opportunity to last 4 to 6 months, have a number of discussions with different hospitality groups. Obviously, we're here sitting today with one of those who have made a decision to move forward. That's Sunridge Development. And today, and what you'll see on the agenda for Monday evening, is entering into an MOU, or Memorandum of Understanding, with Sunridge Properties for the development of the first hotel out at the Riverview site. They are proposing to build a Marriott Spring Hill Suites, and I'll let them at the end kind of talk about who they are and what is Spring Hill Suites, in case we're not as familiar. One of the things that excites us about the Marriott brand is they have a high brand loyalty among their users, which means as new Marriotts go up, a lot of their rooms are filled by other Marriott users who are simply, as they go on vacations or do business travel, are looking for where's the closest Marriott to where I'm staying. So a lot of that activity is driven by the in-brand loyalty program. They've built over 30 hotels in the Southwest, and the thing that excites us about it is they own and operate these type of hotels, so they don't simply build them and lease those out to somebody else and they walk away. Their owners and investors, they want to make sure their properties continue to have the upkeep and care. They've been awarded the Marriott Partnership Circle Award last 4 years, and I think yesterday you had Bill Marriott out to your most recent hotel down in Gilbert. So we're excited to have them on board. Some of the commitments they've made is this hotel will be a minimum of 4 stories, a minimum of 100 rooms. The goal is to start construction in January of 2014 with opening for March of 2015, which is that second spring training season out at the new Cubs facility.
Question? Yes, Councilwoman Higgins?
Vice Mayor. I just wonder, is this, first, like the size, is this what we're, is this too small for what we're looking for in the area? That's one question. And the second is it really the quality of hotel that we're going to need for more than just the month of March? Is this going to draw, you know, is this going to, like, help fulfill the needs that Boeing has for room nights and other businesses in the area? Or are we just building this here at Riverview to attract spring training and, like, a sports market?
I'll first respond, and maybe Paul can respond to that, because obviously he's in the hospitality business. He can talk about the demand drivers. In general, spring training for 6 weeks is a huge hotel driver. But quite simply, you can literally build a hotel anywhere in the valley, and during the month of March and in early April, you're going to be successful. The challenge is how do you be successful the other 10 and a half months of the year. One of the primary drivers for this site is a location, 101, 202. You're kind of the center of the valley universe. Great visibility. One of the drivers is Boeing is 4.5-5 miles down the street. It's in between Sky Harbor and Boeing. And you have just down the street to the south is the Banner Desert facility. So we think it's a good opportunity. Paul can talk about what the market is as far as hospitality. It's still a little bit soft. We're still coming out of the recession. We do believe that this size is a good, what I call, starter opportunity, that first investment. As you notice here, is they have an opportunity to second hotel. And what we'd like to see is prove to the industry that this site and this product works, and that if that works, Marriott wants the opportunity to do a second hotel. And Paul, maybe you want to talk a little about.
Yeah,
Dean, just add something. I stay at Spring Hill Suites all the time, but I just don't, you know, it's not that full service hotel that, like, you know, the higher end business traveler might want to be staying at. So, but I'm quite happy with them. In fact, I was in one 2 days ago.
Yeah, that's a good question. Spring Hill Suites is part of, as you're aware, is part of the Marriott portfolio of hotels. And its place in that portfolio is the upper mid-scale, which is, you know, attracts the corporate customer. I mean, that's their primary focus. And we have several Spring Hill Suites, as we do all the Marriott brands. We currently have all the Marriott brands in our portfolio. And the demographic from the Spring Hill generates a higher revenue than is what is currently experienced by most of the hotels in the competitive set in the immediate area. So it is one of the primary targets would be the Boeing and, you know, so on and so forth. Now, it doesn't have full-service restaurants and those type of amenities. It doesn't have extensive convention space. And there's a reason for that. It just is not, you know, financially feasible to do that. If you wait for that type of product, it'll be a long wait in that particular area. This is a very, very nice product, very well received by the public, by the traveling public. And we have done very well with them. As Scott mentioned, we just opened a Residence Inn next to Banner Gateway Hospital. Unfortunately, it's in Gilbert. Not unfortunately, but you know, I'm sure you wish it was in Mesa.
Always.
But you've probably seen that project, and that's a, you know, another Marriott brand that is similar with a little bit different perspective. It's an extended stay. We built that because the hospital's there, and we get a lot of hospital patients there at the cancer center that will be extended stay. Spring Hill is a great brand, kind of cutting edge, you know, as far as their product, and we'll show you some pictures of some of those that have been built. And so we're very happy with it. We would, you know, we would like to do that. So,
great. Council Member Summers. Thank you, Paul.
You mentioned I think the aesthetic is important here. It's supposed to be Chicago Wrigleyville West. So when you get to these pictures, we cheated. We're moving ahead on the pictures.
Okay.
He's telling me how your layouts are in these various ones because Council Member Richens uses this brand as well. You have two very distinct looking facilities. One is urban, looks like something you might see in Chicago. This one happens, it's in Alexandria, Virginia. The other one, more something that you would typically see in the Southwest because it's in Colorado. But we're trying to create a new vibe here, so I'd be interested to hear a little bit more about what you're planning for aesthetically.
Perfect. So when you get there.
Maybe
we could just move to that part since we're all anxious and excited, and then you could circle around and capture some of the details if that's okay, Scott.
Can you have the next slide? I had a question on the next slide.
You did? Okay. Well, let's do that. Mr. Rigby, would you catch that, please?
Sure.
Yes. Councilwoman Higgins, please.
I just wondered where that first number came from. Did we have – we do recent – what's the word? When you – figure out how much a property's worth.
It's based on the value that we've agreed to sell the property to even the Cubs. So that's kind of based on those.
Okay, so
those appraisals that we did for that.
Appraisals, that was the word. So that's based on the stuff. And do they look at, when we did that appraisal, did we look at the property as it was or as it is after we build a $90 million sports facility on it?
It was as it was at the time. And there's still infrastructure, and this pad site, so they'll still have to bring some infrastructure to it.
Okay.
But you're right, there is the benefit of having the stadium there that wasn't there before when we did the appraisal. That's fair.
I wonder how that changes. And
I don't know.
Okay. Where would you like to go with this? Did we move to that portion?
Why don't we go to the photos, and why don't you kind of walk us through what you were seeing here and the images, and then maybe give us some of your preliminary thoughts about what you're imagining happening out at the site.
Yeah, that's a very good question too, about what will the aesthetics of the building be, how will, you know, what will they match as far as the surrounding area. And certainly when we go into an area, we want it to, you know, have a physical feel that ties in to what the local, you know, aesthetics are and what the local development is. Case in point is at the Banner Gateway Residence Inn. If you had a chance to go by there, that is designed, that's a Residence Inn, but it was designed for that location to fit into that medical environment. More of a high-tech, contemporary look on the building, ties in with the hospital setting. And so if you have a chance, you'll see that. But with regard to this, what we anticipate is doing a design that will fit in with that stadium atmosphere. And it would be, you know, we have some flexibility there. It is a prototype building, but what we're planning on doing right now is a, you know, something that gives mass, gives height, ties into, you know, whether it's brick, steel on the exterior, components that would address that, you know, the environment that we're located in.
So some of the direction we've talked about recently is with the Paseo, we're really trying to create some energy and activation on the Paseo. So as Paul's saying, we kind of want it up close and maybe balconies or whatever, looking out over the Paseo, because ultimately we want to have a very active Paseo and have with them there kind of as the first, we want them to set that tone where it really integrates well with the activities that would happen on the Paseo.
Yeah, so. With this,
and that's the word I wanted to hear is how this aesthetic was going to tie into the
right
action, the activity, and drawing some people out.
Yeah, and that's in our preliminary discussions. Obviously, that's we haven't progressed really far down that path until we get the MOU and the things covered that we need to with the city, but we've had meetings with our architectural team, and that's the direction that we're headed. It will, it's not, it'll probably have parking in the rear and give mass of the building that's presentable out toward Rio Salado and the stadium.
For the front.
Right. Give some mass and height and some perspective there. And the components, will be some brick and steel and a mix of those type of things to tie in with a stadium-type environment.
And in a melding of the Southwestern and Chicago style.
Right.
So it starts
exactly
forming. Well, it is. It's the first real, other than the stadium, first commercial building that's coming out of the ground, and it's going to set the tone for what's going to happen.
Yeah.
In other words, we want to make sure that this fits in well, this leads well.
Right. The location that I think we've pretty much settled on is this location, this site would actually be furthest or closest to the park, the lake, on that side, the Paseo. So it's a combination of, the opportunity for them to have great vistas back into the park and on the Paseo, so it'll be a very unique setting. So I think we'll work with them, and we need to probably provide them even more information about how that's going to look and how that, so they can integrate with that, too.
Yeah, if it looks like what's up on the screen now, I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
And so if you could, maybe some particulars about number of rooms, other things.
That's a good question, and it kind of addresses to Councilwoman Higgins' question too about the value. Without the stadium there, we would have no interest. That's really the attraction, but that's only 1 or 2 months a year, and that's what the driver is, and. What's your more specific question?
Well, it'd be interesting. Perspective for me is, this is the Chicago Cubs Western headquarters.
Right.
They're doing player development there. So there's going to be a lot of activity. And we're excited about this. And, a lot of people get focused on maybe just 1 or 2 months a year. And we think it's going to be a lot more vibrant than that. And
sure.
That's always been the perspective.
Yeah. And in determining, back to your question on number of rooms, and determining that, we take a look at all the demographics and the metrics that are supported by the general area. And that has that comes to play with the sizing issue of the hotel. And based on the current demographics, 100 units is probably pushing it. Other than the two months of the year when you have the immediate demand, we're going to have to draw from Boeing and around the Falcon Field area and probably into Tempe and Scottsdale in order to get the numbers we need even on 100 units. That's the baseline that we're at right now is 100 units. And again, we've consulted with Smith Travel Research, all of the people that do the investigation as far as what is happening in the area. If it was potentially possible to do 200 units, if the market would drive that, we would be happy to do that. But it's not a feasible venture with that number of units based on what the current demand is.
And I'm sure in your study you look at its proximity to Sky Harbor, literally minutes away on that airport.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what we've always known about that Riverview area is just beautifully located to a lot of places.
Yeah, and we'll have to pick up, we'll have to pick up demand from all those generators, and that's what we're anticipating. And as we've looked at all the hotels, it takes into consideration what the drivers are in the immediate market area as far as RevPAR and average daily occupancies and whatnot and rates.
Well, Mr. Rigby, if you could maybe run through some of the particulars there.
Well, I think I'll go to the last slide, which is we've talked about this initial hotel. One of the things that we've structured into the MOU and will be in the final agreement is the opportunity for them to do a second hotel. And it goes back to this point is This is the initial hotel. We need to prove the site. When I say prove the site to the hospitality industry, to visitors, that this is a great location. And so what I would say is, as we prove the market there, as the market stabilizes and gets strong in the hospitality world, as we have structured a deal with Marriott, they have an opportunity to do a second hotel. And the second hotel basically has a baseline that says it has to be of at least equal size, quality, and stature as the initial one. So the goal would be is maybe right now it's the Spring Hill Suites. Hopefully the market stabilizes and gets strong and the demand grows, and potentially we move to that full service type of facility, such like a Courtyard opportunity. That's where we see we need, you know, it's everything's coming out of the ground today. The market's coming back, but we think this is a great first shot in the arm to get the commercial development going in Wrigleyville. It's not just about hotels. It's how do we prove to the retail and eateries that the Cubs want to bring and entice to come out here. And everybody needs to see that first. I call it the mall syndrome. Everybody wants to see the Dillard's sign up to go into the new mall. Once the Dillard's and the Macy's sign on, then those restaurants and stores you see within the mall decide to sign on. So by having the stadium and the park and now a hotel of a Marriott status, we think it's a big signal to the commercial development community that this is a real project.
Great. We have a couple of questions. First, Mr. Cavanaugh, and then Councilwoman Higgins.
Yeah, just a question on the restriction. I know we've had interest from multiple entities for hotels on the site, not just this group. And if you're delaying this until, September, October 2015, before we could talk to anyone else, what happens if we get a great inquiry from a Hilton or something, you know, that wants to come and be on the site? And I guess I have some concern over the restriction on that. We hadn't talked about that in any of the briefings or discussions with the council before, and so I'm just trying to figure out how that's in the best interest of the city.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Cavanaugh, one of the challenges of any hotel opening up is that first really 6 to 18 months period of stabilizing to prove themselves the market, get their name out there, and start to get the client base to realize that there's a hotel at that location. The other thing is to have multiple hotels open up in the general timeline of each other. What you begin to see is sometimes called a cannibalization rate. Is I open up at $100 and my competitor opens up next door and he'll or she will offer $90, and then I feel I have to compete with that. And while you have maybe perhaps more rooms, but your ADR may be, you know, taking the hit because there's now an oversaturation of the product in that area. So the goal that we're trying to do is provide that first hotel an opportunity to get in, stabilize itself, get its name out there. 6 months, quite honestly, is not a long time to do that. Even in our discussions with some of the other hotel interest. Quite honestly, Marriott's been at the table with us for probably 6-8 months. Even talking to some of the new other hotels that have expressed some interest, they're much earlier in the process talking with us. And even if they were to start their process, really get going, even they've kind of admitted that they probably wouldn't be ready within that 6 month period. And quite honestly, you know, once spring training is over, even with the 6 months of, let's say, opening in August, September, it's probably not the prime time for a second hotel to open up. They would wait most likely till the winter season to come back on. So we think it's a good balancing that allows that first initial hotel to get in there and get going, but it doesn't preclude us from continuing to have discussions with others. And if they decide to go forward, simply that 6 month waiting period right now is not showing to be a detriment for them to move forward with those projects.
And just as a follow up, I mean, what if Mr. Ricketts comes to you tomorrow and says, my partner Starwood wants to put a hotel right next to the stadium? We would be telling him, no, we can't talk to you until that point in time. Again, I have a concern because in other development agreements that we have done, I haven't seen us preclude competition. Unless I'm missing it, this is something different than we have done before, and it's not anything that we have talked about.
Sure.
In our briefings on this.
So, Vice Mayor, Councilmember Cavanaugh, that's correct. And this is at the request of this developer. They felt it was important for them to have some stabilization. The reality is we have talked with probably all the major brands to date, including Starwood, including Hilton, obviously Marriott. Hyatt already has a presence in the vicinity, so they're probably not interested at this point. So in that fact, where those discussions are, we don't have, while we've visited the site, we've had significant discussions with all of those brands. The reality is, I think Mr. Rigby made this point, is by the time they would come back to us, which they're having preliminary discussions, but they haven't even identified their developer. And what's unique about here is you not only have Marriott, who has, I'm not sure what the word is, but they've endorsed or whatever this developer to move forward. The other brands are still trying to find developers who are willing to go out and, if you would, take the risk of developing on this site at this time. So that also tells us that while this site is really, in our minds, we think it's ideal, the industry is still trying to recover and figure out what makes the best sense. We really don't think that this, the idea if we get this approved by council, we come back in May with a development agreement, they'll have such a head start that difference between the time it would take us to go meet with other hotels and bring them forward, they're really not going to be, if you would, frozen out for any significant period of time anyway. Just for the matter of fact, we don't even have them sitting actively in front of us with a developer like we have here. We've talked to the brands, but the brands are still looking to identify if there's a developer slash, and then what really becomes, I think, important, an owner, an operator of the hotels. Now, we are actively talking with those groups, and we are talking with Starwood. We've started those conversations 3 months ago, and so that's kind of where we're at this point.
And again, I guess I'm not saying I don't support the proposal. I think it's a great proposal. I just have a little bit of concern of encumbering public property with an anti-competition agreement, you know, for for a period of time.
So all it does is it doesn't allow us to for another hotel to open within 6 months. There is a provision that allows for, they have the first right to choose to do a second. If we get approached by another hotel, they have the option to match the offer with the standards that we've put in here. The other hotel has to put up some money to show that they're serious about it. So there's a way that it both gives the Marriott, for them being the first ones in, if they want to expand, they can. If we get an offer by another brand, they have an opportunity to come to the table and make an equal or better offer. So we've tried to put it in place so that those who are taking the first risk have some options, but it doesn't preclude anybody else at the end of the day. If Marriott declines and says, you know, we're happy with the one, we're not ready to do the second, then somebody else can come right in.
Councilman Kavanaugh, just to address that in a little more, to reiterate what Mr. Brady has said, it's really a question of economics. If there was another, if Starwood or somebody was already in place, we probably wouldn't have any interest just because of what the area can support. And that's evidenced by the actual numbers that are on the brochure, the study numbers that reference the market. The metrics that are occurring in the greater market as far as the hotel industry, is just not feasible at this point to put two hotels there. And the time that it takes to stabilize a hotel and to get it active, you know, actively producing and whatnot, there's some limits there, and that's the reason for that. We have gone into some markets where we've developed three hotels next door to each other. In actually three Marriott brands, and some markets we've developed two, but that's been a phased, a phased process, and so that's you know some feedback regarding that.
Okay. Ms. Higgins,
thank you. the study you referenced, is that something we did, or is that something we can see? Because that would be good information, because I just wonder how you end up with 100. You know, where did the 100 room? And obviously it came from some market study that we have not been privy to. But that would be great information so we could actually, because, okay, I'm not a hotel developer, right? I don't even know, are those pictures you showed us, 100 room hotels? Is, you know, like, what's the Hyatt Place? What's the Marriott next door? How about the Hilton? Just so we get a sense of what is a 100 room hotel.
Well, if you want to get an idea, the one that we built next to, we just opened a month ago next to Banner Gateway, that's 100 units.
Okay.
It looks much larger than that, but it is 100 units. These hotels are approximately 100 to 120 units.
Okay.
That are being referenced.
So your market research says,
well,
if the area can support, I mean, if it came back and said you needed 180 rooms, I'm sure that's what you would be presenting this morning?
Well, basically we look at the demographics and the market metrics generated by Smith Travel Research that shows what the occupancy is. And if you basically have an occupancy that's in the high 50% and the capital investment to build whatever product you're going to build and you're running in the 50 to low 60% occupancy, 100 rooms is a stretch. I mean, we don't need a, you know, extensive market study to tell us that.
Okay.
If you're going to have 50 rooms empty every night, your break-even point is approximately 65 to 70%.
But Paul, the Smith Travel is a resource that we could go draw that same. It's doing an analysis of the existing market, and we could go get that ourselves and share that.
Absolutely. They won't tell you need to build 100 units. They'll tell you what the market is doing, and the developer will look at it and say, okay, you know, our break-even point traditionally are 65 to 70%. The market is at 58%. We're going to lose money out the door for the first, you know, X number of months until stabilization. And so the developer makes that call, but it's pretty easy when you know where your break-even point is and what the market is doing in general.
And do they look at, like, future, or do they look at, like, developments, like, will be built out in other areas of the country to compare what happens to the market when something like that comes in? Or is it just kind of, this is the area today, and this is what we can support?
They look at the area today, and you know, in the case of the Cubs Stadium, it is going to bring some business, but the principal time when they're going to bring business, everybody's full anyway. They will be doing spring ball and winter ball and all of the other things, but that's not your big room night producer. It is during spring training. You could be mom and pop's, you know, hotel, and you're still going to fill during that time. The question is, what are you going to do in the other 10 months of the year? And that's what's critical in that, you know, that average occupancy for a year's time.
So now this is a different question, but on just like the Spring Hill Suites brand, like depending on where you go, they have different amenities. Like your picture shows a little coffee bar and a bar. I've been to other things that are just, you know, there's the little buy a soda in a little cooler. What decisions, I mean, do you have to make? Change stuff like and I've been at little other Marriotts that have like a little limited menu where you can actually get a sandwich and a salad.
Yeah, the Courtyard has the bistro, which is an in-house, you know, what you're referring to. The points on the Spring Hill Suites is they include breakfast, a fairly extensive breakfast. Mm-hmm. They have a market for sundries and various different things. All of the standard room is 25% bigger than a regular hotel room. It's bigger than the Courtyard room. It's one of their emerging star brands. It was rated by J.D. Power as the top brand in their segment along with Hilton Garden Inn. Some of the other factors that are included in that, well, there's an offering of meeting space, too. It's not a convention hotel, per se, but you have meeting space, you have the market, you have the breakfast that's included. They are all suites that have a small kitchenette. They're one-room suites. 25% bigger than a standard hotel room, whether it's a Hilton Garden Inn or a Courtyard. Caters to the leisure market. It's very good for sports teams because they like the free breakfast. The more space, they can usually sleep more. Price point on them is very commensurate with a Courtyard. So that gives you a little bit of detail about it, but it is one of their emerging power brands.
But like this picture showed like an actual bar with beverages available. Do you pick, like you as the developer, decide what parts of the Spring Hill you're going to build in your...
It is a prototype, and you include the elements that are part of their prototype.
Okay.
You can put a bar in. We won't put a bar in this particular location. So,
not that we would discourage. We like options in Mesa. But, like I said, I stayed at one Monday night in Saginaw, Michigan. Would be a... It's a choice, but it's nice to have the ability to not have to leave the hotel for something.
Right.
So
yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You know what's nice? We're able to visit with you. This is the first time we've had to meet you and kind of discuss some of these ideas. So thank you for, you know, as you give us all this information.
You bet. Thank you for having us.
Sure. Mr. Rigby?
I think just in closing, the next steps is pending approval on Monday night. We would be coming back with a full agreement, hopefully in May, to finalize all the details. Then, obviously, the project moves into the design and construction phase. The other contingent that's important to this is the City of Mesa and the Chicago Cubs are in agreements to what we're affectionately calling the option agreement amendment, which was the original agreement that we have with the Cubs on how to do commercial development, that they would take principal lead. This agreement that we'll come back to in hopefully the next 45 days would be removing some of that property from the Cubs' responsibility and moving it to the city's responsibility, but focusing on the hospitality development and allowing both parties to work aggressively to further commercial development out at Riverview.
Right, and maybe you could just give us a quick overview. Just recently, there was a tour on the site and involved Chicago businesses.
Yeah, probably, I guess it's now 3 weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, Chicago Cubs, it was an opportunity for them to get some of their media outlets back in the Chicago Midwest area to come out and view the site and really see it coming out of the ground. I think it was also an excuse to get out of the snow. So they had two buses out there, probably 25, 30 people of the media out there.
50, yeah.
Okay, 50, including Gary.
Got to count Nelson. Gary.
Yeah. What's that?
Got to count Gary.
Yeah, he doubled it. But he was out there taking the tour of the whole facility. The second part of the tour, which didn't get a lot of attention as it was, is they had their major corporate sponsorships as well as pending potential partnerships as well as other potential partners with them to show the site, to show the opportunities for investment, whether through sponsorships at the Stadium Spring Training or potentially at Wrigleyville, to see the area, see this Paseo that's been talked about, to see the stadium come out of the ground. I think if you were to go there today, when we were out there, there's probably only a couple pieces of steel coming out of the ground for the actual stadium. If you were to go out there today, basically all of home plate and wrapping around, the lattice work that's going up, it's pretty amazing. So I think the attention of the site is picking up because it's really coming out of the ground. People can kind of picture where things are going. And then I think what's exciting to us is, you know, if the mayor is able to be under construction by January of next year, as spring training starts that first year, you're going to see all that activity walking by that construction site, including sponsors, including potential businesses saying, Marriott's going in, why am I not here? I need to be thinking about this opportunity.
Right. And that's the excitement I took away and why I mentioned that. So we have this evolving Wrigley West. We have the opportunity for hotels and the city's involvement there. There's active activity going on with businesses from Chicago looking on that south side of the Paseo. Things are happening. This is good. I do remember some naysayers that thinking things would never happen out there. So I take away the positive out of that portion. Are there any other questions from council? Well, thank you for attending today and giving us this great news. And look forward, this is again for a MOU that we'll look at Monday night. Yep. And then the future development of those other aspects. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation and discuss a branding update on Visit Mesa. And please feel free to introduce yourselves and although we recognize friendly faces.
Good morning, Vice Mayor, Council Members. I'm Mark Garcia with Visit Mesa. With me is Jeff Maraglia with Mindset, Inc., our new brand manager. That's exciting news about the Spring Hill Suites. We look forward to helping book it and keep it full as much as possible. The last time I was here was October. I think I was about 4 to 5 months on the job. And I gave you sort of a what's the new guy up to presentation. Shared with you some of the changes that we were making internally, structurally, organizationally, some personnel moves, some exciting projects like LPGA, which is come and gone. We're thrilled with the VisitMesa.com Gateway Classic and its prospects for growth in the future. We talked about wrapping light rail cars and buses in Denver and Ogden, our new customer relations management system, a new database that not only are we excited about, but our partners are really excited about. But at the close of that presentation, I began to share with you the need for a full destination rebrand. And the first part of that process was an audit of our current brand. And I introduced to you Jeff Maraglia at that time, and we're thrilled that he can be here again this morning. Another important first step was, we felt, changing our name from Mesa Convention and Visitors Bureau to Visit Mesa. But so much has happened since October, and that's what we're here to share with you this morning. Our board of directors ratified the name change in November, and from there, as it relates to this rebranding process, we were off and running. But we wanted to make sure that it was transparent, that there was buy-in from the community, and to do so, we created a brand development advisory committee made up of key stakeholders in our industry, along with members from the city of Mesa. And that committee met for the first time in December. That first meeting was really an overview. It was about process. It was about timelines and goals and objectives. But it was also about reviewing the RFP that we had drafted internally. They made some changes. It was kicked out in December. And then the group met in January. The RFP was sent to about 12 to 15 creative ad agencies that we knew could do the job effectively. And in January, we received about 9 responses, 5 of which had responded adequately, that met all of our requirements that we had outlined in the RFP. And the group in January narrowed it down to 2 finalists. And those 2 finalists were Jeff with Mindset and a group out of San Diego called StarMag Group. And both groups really did an outstanding job, both in their written proposals and in their in-person presentations that were held in February. But ultimately, the advisory committee unanimously supported Jeff receiving the creative services contract, and really for three reasons. First, they preferred his creative concept. Secondly, he was less expensive. And third, he's local. And when I mean local, I mean really local. I mean, he's going to be in our office. He's going to be in-house, which was really attractive to the committee and to us at Visit Mesa because, you know, you need to be – this is a very detailed process. You need to see what's happening in a day-in, day-out basis. And that's tough to do when you have a state in between you, and you then have to do things by email, digitally. You have to Skype and those sorts of things, and it's, you know, far more preferred for me to be able to just walk down the hall and give some direction to Jeff. So we're thrilled he's with us. The next couple of slides, if you want to go through them, just share with you who's on the committee. The last time we were here, the mayor had suggested strongly that we make this a regional brand, and we're doing just that. And we wanted to make sure there was representation on the committee from Apache Junction, from Gilbert and Queen Creek. And it's exactly what the audit had revealed, which Jeff is going to get into in a minute. I don't need to go through all these names. These names are very familiar to all of you. But John Birch is doing a great job as our chair. Jay O'Donnell now serves on our full board of directors. Jay's doing a fantastic job for us. The committee as a whole is doing a great job for us. And we're thrilled to have Jeff. And in my opinion, I'm thrilled that the committee made this selection. I've had the pleasure of working with Jeff for a number of years. He helped develop the brand for Phoenix when he was with EB Lane, now being on his own for several years now with Mindset. He's developed what many call the gold standard for destination brands in our business for the work he did for San Antonio and their Deep in the Heart campaign, and most recently with the Greater Palm Springs Convention and Visitors Bureau. But we feel his best work is ahead. It's going to happen right here in Mesa. So without further ado, I'm going to kick it over to Jeff, who's going to reveal what came from the audit and the creative steps that we've taken thus far.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity, Vice Mayor, Council members. Not only have I been awarded the contract for the creative contract as well and been able to be part of driving the brand audit, but I was also very proud to be a new resident of this great city of ours. And I will be committed to do my very best to interface with each and every one of you along the way with this process. And it's going to be an incredible process, an energizing process, a process in which when we see the brand live, hopefully we're all going to embrace it and live it each and every day, as I will, and will be continuing to do so. What the brand audit revealed is that, you know, with over 60 plus interviews that we had with stakeholders, including members of this council, business owners, experience providers, residents, we looked at, you know, many different avenues to see where our direction, where our best place would be on the world stage. And we feel that we have an empowering position to take because it reaches beyond our borders. It reaches beyond, you know, Mesa. It extends to more of a regional opportunity because we want to broaden our experience set for each and every traveler that wishes to have something unique, special, for them, and that's all about what people want. So we're going to embark on a more regional Arizona brand experience. We're going to touch into the areas of Apache Junction, the town of Gilbert, as well as Queen Creek, because we know that we have a lot of things to offer there. What makes this really special, why we need to go regional, is because, you know, it's all about our rich heritage. You know, agritourism is huge, but we have a growing sophistication to be part of the world stage. You know, our family, Midwestern values, we talk about Chicago West, bringing those Midwestern values here. It's important that we are authentic and grounded in that area. This is not a place to visit, but also it's a wonderful place to live. It's a community, many different communities that are people with passion. They're passionate about their sports. They're passionate about their wonderful outdoor recreational opportunities, their new emerging dining, the new chefs that are moving here, and the new opportunities that people have when they can see how farm-to-fork experiences could happen better than any other city in this country. We also are a creative and cultural hub anchored by our wonderful Mesa Arts Center. And we're a gateway, not just with our great airport that's emerging each and every day, bringing millions of passengers each and every year, but a gateway to one of the finest recreational areas at our doorstep, more so than any other community and city in this great state of ours. So we have a reinvigorated promise, something that today's travelers, from families to meeting planners, to residents, to our communities, to our leaders, we have to take that promise and realign it with our reinvigorated self. The mayor said himself that we are a city of new energy. We are the next great evolution. We are a new American city. Yes, we are showing the way. These are all the things that we have listened to, heard, and sculpted within the creation of where we're going to embark on with our brand. It's very important that we listen to each and every stakeholder that wishes to become the ambassador of our brand. But these are just passions that we want to turn into solutions. These are important things that we have to, you know, keep our eye on the ball and understand why we have this energy and how could that be part of the today's traveler's mindset and the meeting planner's mindset and the people who are looking for new sports and outdoor recreation and dining experiences. I like to think that this new energy provides a sense of vibrance. This great evolution is about our growing spirit. But to be a new American city, there's a cool factor here. It's hip. It's cool. It's younger because we're getting the influx of students with the new educational opportunities that we have here. We're also showing the way in many different ways, not just with tourism, but we have an opportunity to become the catalyst for economic development, become a brand in which businesses all across the globe could see what is happening in Mesa. So those are the things we want to do and achieve with our tourism opportunity and tourism brand. But these are brand attributes, all these things of vibrance and hip and cool, but it's not the brand itself. We want to be more truthful, and we want to resonate with today's travelers. And there's many different distinct groups we have to appeal to in our efforts for our tourism brand. We have to appeal to vacationers. What do they want? What are they looking for? Our tour operators means money brought to the city from people all over the globe. Our trade show and our clients and our agents who want to find something different and tell a new story and understand a new story about what this destination offers. Distinct group meetings. What do we do best? Large, small, sports, opening up new doors and new opportunities for people who want to host tournaments. We're doing a great job right now, even with golf, but we have soccer, and we have tennis, and we have other things that we can do, swimming, that will be a big part of what we drive each and every year. And it's about economic development. Could we appeal to companies all over the world looking for an amazing quality of life? And that quality of life can bring possibility to grow families, grow community, grow business. I'm going to play you something that kind of in the spirit of where we're at, of where we're at. We have a video up.
I might need to hit back or something.
Yeah, here we go now. Here we go now. Here we go now. Here we go. Here we go now. Here we go now.
So repetitive advertising. We're relentless, if nothing.
Well, the beauty of this is that we are limitless in our perception, and we are limitless of possibility. We have limitless opportunities, and we are going places far beyond where we went. Mesa City Limitless allows us to push the envelope a little bit further and incorporates us as a regional brand by bringing in all the experiences that people don't normally find in other destinations. City Limitless allows us to talk about, you know, the things that we can do better and things that we will paint the canvas, this great canvas of ours, in terms of experiences and what today's travelers want. Authenticity of what we have, excitement of what we will offer, and Mesa will be more than March through this brand.
Chris, can we get this signed? Mesa City Limitless?
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I want to put one on the... I'll ask Dan if he can make one up for you.
Dan? We're just getting going.
This is just the tip of the iceberg, but thank you so much.
I want one. Good. I want to put it on a rope.
And we have a prototype. We have prototypes that we can create, but this is all conceptual form. There are logos and designs that are presently on the table. And this goes without any sort of testing involved. We're going to go out there and test it with our consumers, our travelers. We're testing it with our meeting planners. But we feel we have a viable opportunity and a real true canvas to start showcasing why we are limitless and so many else. This is a brand. This is not a campaign. This is a brand that everyone will be part of and embrace. So here are some of the concepts that we're rolling through. A look, a feel that allows us to start, you know, creating an identity that will get people excited to understand who we are and what we offer. And these are just merely just concepts in the works. So to look at it, we know that City Limitless is believable. Because if you look at what we're doing, not just for the standpoint of what we have, but how does it appeal to your emotions? Travelers today are more emotional. They decide upon their emotions. What they desire, what they need, what they want is all about these are the opportunities that we could provide a limitless portfolio of things to do today and build on for the future. Then City Limitless really becomes a believable proposition for our brand. It extends beyond our Mesa City, goes into the other areas, which allows us to become greater in our perception and greater in terms of a value experience for each and every guest. But the beauty of it is we have guiding principles. The guiding principles will guide a lot of the things that we're going to talk about. We know that from Visit Mesa's standpoint, we could tell a story that is boundless. We're geographically a surprise to many people, how close we are to the Tonto National Forest, how close we are to the bounty of agritourism. We're effortless with our airport now taking shape, bringing more passengers each and every day to our great city. We're priceless in terms of the emotion of the value experience. It is a priceless experience. We're fearless because we are energized, we're on the move, and we're headed towards, you know, even brighter horizons. And we're also timeless because we can't forget about our great history, but we also have an eye on our future. These are the guiding principles that limitless equals in our terms of expressing ourselves. Our creative expression, well, it's building. We're working on it. We're moving forward in what we're doing. We like to think that, most importantly, to find that creative expression is also finding the emotional connection. What's going to appeal to a family? What's going to appeal to coaches? What's going to appeal to the international tourist that wants an incredible Arizona experience right here in Mesa? And that's what we're trying to do, connect emotionally. How do we do that? Well, we have to be relevant. We have to be sure that we understand today's target audiences. This is not a broad appeal, but we're going to dig deeper and connect with people who are looking for a unique sporting opportunity, a unique dining opportunity, a unique cultural and art opportunity. We're going to make it so relevant, it's going to bring it down to one word in our creative expression, which is all about me. And nothing is greater personified in the word Mesa than the word me. And we're going to appeal to me. The brand, understand, it's about City Limitless. This is our canvas. This is where we're going. The campaign is personal. It's taking an interest in each and every traveler to appeal to who they are. That's what Mesa is. That's what Mesa has always been done. It's all about me, City Limitless. And how we do that? Well, we express it uniquely by appealing to families and what they get out of it from a unique sports opportunity, such as if they're here in March, but we know they're going to be here in August. We also know that they're going to enjoy what's new and exciting and the things that are happening in a modern urban community. We know it's about healthy living and appeal to those that offer that sense of healthy living from the standpoint of what Mesa does best. Spirit and the thrill of enlightenment. All these things, what's cool and what's urban, it's all about who we are and what we offer. It's all about me, adventure, and memory, creating those wonderful memories. It's all about me, all about Mesa. It's City Limitless, the international tourist. It's all about meeting planners, because we all know it's about me, me, me. And we need to appeal to that. And these are devices that will allow people to think me, to think Mesa. When they think Mesa, they're going to think of limitless possibilities. When a business has an interest in a region to set up, we know that we can talk about City Limitless in such a way that they're going to feel like their company could grow as well. And that's what we want in from a tourism brand, from an economic development brand. So, City Limitless, it's all about me. It clearly speaks to all of Mesa's points of differentiation. It's a positive emotion. That's what we want. What matters to me, the visitor, is what's important in communicating our brand. It's believable because we know that Mesa today, Mesa tomorrow, will be limitless. It crosses all geographic areas and cultural boundaries, and it sells Mesa and the region beautifully. That's what we are. That's what we're embarking on. That's where we're headed towards. This is our concept. And the testing is happening this month. We're going to go in a number of different key markets. We're using a lot of different bold techniques through bulletin board techniques and interfacing with focus groups. So you're going to see results within the next 30 days to see how this looks in front of the eyes of the people that we want to connect with each and every day. I thank you for the time. This is another part that I'll hand it off to Mark. Thank you for embracing this concept, and certainly thank you for embracing me as a new resident of your community.
Well, finally, I just wanted to share with you the damage that tends to come with enterprises of this magnitude. And that's what you see before you now is a budget. It's a pretty realistic budget. These are things that will hit throughout the course of the next year. But some things obviously are happening immediately. Jeff's obviously started. We're doing the testing. And we intend to roll out at least the beginnings of this brand, as I shared with you last time, at a huge international trade show, big industry trade show in June in Las Vegas. That will include a new trade show booth, some of our new collateral, certainly a new logo, and some other elements. Our destination video, which you saw, was not our destination video. It was just a teaser. Our true destination video will be about 3.5 minutes long. It'll be customizable, editable. But we hope you're excited, as we are, with all of this. We're thrilled with it. We know we're going to be successful with it. And we are working with the city manager in his office to come to a creative solution to help support these costs. At that point, we'll take any questions. Vice Mayor.
Any questions? Mr. Summers.
I'll start out with some comments, more than a question, let you respond to that. I like how the brand is going, and it's centered on the me. What's interesting about this is I think social media has to play a major part of taking it from a brand, which is well-defined here, into a media campaign. And I was listening to a really interesting story about advertising and how it's really seen a sea change, because you don't get to define oftentimes your brand as much as you would like to. That social media really is putting is changing the way advertising is impacting brands. And one example, and this was a negative example, is you spend all this time, this airline spends all this time defining itself and the experience that you're going to have. You're going to, you know, by its music and by, you know, the ease and by what's on the television, but they're really defined by the social media attack about what people really think, the pictures of them in line, the pictures of them, you know, when your bags get torn up, those kind of stories that come over. So when we look at this me brand, I think what we need to start thinking about is how the experiences, how how we make sure that people maximize their positive experiences in Mesa so that me becomes pictures of me at the ball game, me at a great hotel, me at some fantastic city parks, because we're using those as our soccer fields, our ball games, or our swim events, that the me part of this is really extremely positive. You can't always control that, but I think the way this brand is setting up could lead to leads in the right direction about thinking how we try to manage that path as best we can so that people have positive experiences and those things outside of our control actually work for our benefit.
Great point. We understand how social media is going to help shape our brand. We understand that it is our job to provide positive imagery, positive stories, and we know that this particular brand and this message behind this brand will help support that. But I do believe that today it's very important that as we are making it more about today's consumer directly, they're going to become the ambassadors and they're going to become the positive force behind this brand. We're going to utilize a number of different social media channels campaigns and programs in order to push these messages out there. And we'll be able to do a greater job in looking at how we can become a unique presence in today's travel in today's traveler's mind. And those are the things we look to capitalize on, and those are certainly we're very mindful of setting a new mindset for where we're going with social media. Great question.
Mr. Richens.
How does some of the stuff that we've done traditionally for a long time, spring training, meeting events, all that, how does that kind of fold into that? It's if we focus our shift our marketing to, and I'm not sure if this is the plan, but if we shift our marketing to the brand awareness thing, you know, what happens to those particular events that we do, particularly spring training, which we just heard a pretty important presentation on?
We feel it's just going to get better. It's part of who we are. I mean, we know that March does extremely well, and we know that spring training is kind of the flagship of what drives Mesa's tourism, you know, year after year. But we also know that we have to be more competitive in today's world when it comes to creating greater experiences so people could look at Mesa differently. It's not going to change things. It's just going to make it better. And we think it allows us to extend our message for spring training, extend our message for the times that we were driving, and bring more people here during times where they're not normally here. And those are the things that we need to drive.
But you still plan on marketing specifically?
Absolutely.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Richens, great question. We will never fully deviate from the fact that we are a friends and family destination, and spring training will always be a key component of our marketing. The fact is, however, there are a lot of changes that are happening thanks to your leadership, thanks to the mayor's leadership. And we need to start elevating this brand commensurate with those changes. We need to start to appeal to a younger demographic. And that's where we're going with this. And social media, Councilman Summers, is a big part of that. So I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah, I just, it's going to be a tough shift. You know, it's going to be a little mind. I think this is very clever. And when I saw it, when I was going through materials in preparation for this meeting, I ran around the house showing, hey, honey, show my wife, what do you think of this? Show my neighbor, what do you think of this? And it is. It's very clever. I love the play on words with it and the all the different things that it implies also. So I applaud you for I just wish I was as clever as you guys were about stuff like
so
this.
This is
great.
Let me just tell you, it doesn't come out of thin air, and we thank you for allowing us to get to this point, because without doing the audit the way we did it, and interviewing each and every one of you, and we sat in rooms and we talked about many different things, it came down to this. So you have a big part in what we have created for you today.
Great. Well, we're definitely feeling your passion, excitement. Any other questions? If not, okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Next item up is a report on upcoming job order contracts. Ms. Ewing?
Good morning, Vice Mayor and Council. That's a tough act to follow.
I know. We want all that passion in this. Yeah.
Okay. Right. We have several exciting projects on the list this morning for your consideration. Actually, these are exciting projects. The first project on the list is from our brand new Parks Bond Package program. It's for Monterey Park over off of Power Road. It's to install a
37 trees along Monterey with drip, and to also remove a septic tank that's on site to start getting the site ready for a future park. We're pretty excited about the price on this one. We had gone out and gotten quotes from a nursery to provide the trees, and using the contractor's buying power of our JOC contracts, we were able to get the trees installed with drip irrigation for $1,000 less than buying the trees outright. So that's kind of where the buying power of these contractors comes in, that helps us get our projects a little cheaper. The second one is a flood control grant project. We got over half of the project funded through the flood control district to repair an area over off of Gilbert and Decatur, an area where we've had some property damage occurring from drainage, so it's to correct some issues there. And the third one is Rotary Park, which is just to the south of us here. I think it's in Councilmember Glover's district. And this is another really good example of being able to use the unique nature of the contracting method. Initially, the estimates on this park were over $200,000. And I have to give the park staff kudos. They went out and negotiated some deals and low prices on the playground equipment, got some stuff donated. We're also bringing the community in on, I think it's going to be scheduled for May 4th to do some of the labor and putting the engineered wood fiber fill in under the park. So we're able to get this park for under $100,000, less than half of where we started. So it's kind of the unique nature of being able to do these projects this way.
Well, great news. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. We appreciate that. Next item is acknowledge receipts of minutes of various boards and committees. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next item, hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. Mr. Summers.
Vice Mayor, I'll do two very quickly. The mayor may elaborate a little bit more upon his return, but we had a forum at AZ Labs, which was really about selling AZ Labs and showing what a jewel it is, not just for the city of Mesa or the region, but the state as a whole. From that meeting, I understand we have a couple of or more parties who are interested in perhaps pursuing the leases of some space, so hopefully we'll see more agreements in the near future. Also, last night I helped moderate one of the meetings for Gilbert Public Schools. They're searching for a new superintendent. So if you happen to be in the city of Mesa but within the Gilbert Public School District, they're going to be holding several more meetings over there. I think tonight, if you have the opportunity to go, they're the board would really like to solicit input on what parents and other stakeholders would like to see in the next superintendent. So.
Great. Thank you, sir. Mr. Cavanaugh.
Thank you. Five of us were able to attend a great event yesterday at Serrano Adult Daycare, and they announced really their kind of rebranding to Oakwood Creative Care, which I think was a well-thought-out concept. The city's had a very long partnership with Serine over the years, and the Mesa leadership class this year took this agency on as for its class project, and I think between the work the city did, we executed it several months ago, an independent lease with this nonprofit, the facility looks dramatically better, and because they're housed in a city facility that was showing its age, and the work that has been done there in partnership with the city, with the agency, with Mesa LTD, was really amazing to see how the project has transformed. And they really have provided a very valuable service to the community throughout the years. And it's an example of a great partnership between the city working with its human services, nonprofits, for the betterment of the community. So I just wanted to congratulate all of our staff who worked so hard on the lease agreement over the past year, worked on the improvements, and for the Mesa leadership class for showing real leadership in taking the project on. Thank you.
Thank you. It was wonderful. Any others? Mr. Brady, scheduling of meetings.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just a reminder, this Saturday is Wingstock, where music and chicken meet. It's this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Mesa Amphitheater. Tickets are $5 in advance, $7 the day of the event. If you come early at 10:30 a.m., there will be a Easter egg hunt for the kids. Our next study session council meeting will be on Monday, April 1st. Thank you.
And one more event this weekend is the Heather Farr Classic at Longbow. which is American Junior Golf Association. So if you Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Longbow, Northeast Mesa, beautiful course, walk around, follow tiny little children that are like 12 and 15 and 17 that can hit the ball farther than you would ever hope to in your life, and accurately. So it's a lot of fun. It's a great event, and come on out and walk around. It's a lovely day in a park. So thank you.
Very nice. And we also have a flyer here for a general plan update workshops that are being held throughout the city, and hope that we get citizen and input in the process. Ms. Bickelson, any speakers?
No request, Vice Mayor.
Great. Looks like we have an executive session. Do we have a motion? We have a motion and a second. We'll move into executive session. Thank you. Okay.